Deuteronomy chapter 5. The Ten Commandments occur two places in the Bible. The first is in Exodus 20, which is a story of God's people during the Exodus. And the second is here in Deuteronomy chapter 5. And the setting is about 40 years later. Moses is giving a sermon to the people, and you could think of the entire book of Deuteronomy as one long sermon that Moses gave to the people before they crossed into the Promised Land. And so in Deuteronomy chapter 5, Moses is essentially giving a sermon about the Ten Commandments, reminding the people about them. So this is Deuteronomy chapter 5, starting at verse 1. Moses convened all Israel and said to them, "Hear, O Israel, the statutes and ordinances that I am addressing to you today. You shall learn them and observe them diligently. The Lord our God made a covenant with us at Horeb. Not with our ancestors did the Lord make this covenant, but with us, who are all of us here alive today. The Lord spoke with you face to face at the mountain, out of the fire. At that time, I was standing between the Lord and you to declare to you the word of the Lord. For you were afraid because of the fire and did not go up the mountain." And he said,
"I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol, whether in the form of anything that is in heaven above, or that is on the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing children for the iniquity of parents to the third and fourth generation of those who reject me, but showing steadfast love to the thousandth generation of those who love me and keep my commandments.
You shall not make wrongful use of the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not acquit anyone who misuses his name."
"Observe the Sabbath day and keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your male or female slave, or your ox or your donkey, or any of your livestock, or the resident alien in your towns, so that your male and female slave may rest as well as you. Remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day.
Honor your father and mother, as the Lord your God commanded you, so that your days may be long, and that you may go well with you in the land of the Lord that God has given you.
You shall not murder.
Neither shall you commit adultery.
Neither shall you steal.
Neither shall you bear false witness against your neighbor.
Neither shall you covet your neighbor's wife. Neither shall you desire your neighbor's house or field, or male or female slave, or ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor."
The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. And a second reading, also from Deuteronomy. This is perhaps the central text of Judaism, and it's the one text that I still remember in the Hebrew. Shema Israel, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. Keep these words that I am commanding you today in your heart. Recite them to your children and talk about them when you are at home and when you are away, when you lie down and when you rise. Bind them as a sign on your hand. Fix them as an emblem on your forehead and write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Many of you may remember the news story from years ago about a monument of the Ten Commandments that traveled from town to town. The monument itself weighed 5,280 pounds, or just over 500 pounds per commandment. When the display had to be removed from the truck, they had to use a heavy-duty construction crane just to lift it off the truck bed and to put it back down. One commentator quipped that while it is true that Jesus once chided the Pharisees for neglecting the weightier matters of the law, surely a 2.5-ton statue was overkill. But there are a couple other problems with the monument beyond its ostentatious size. First of all, they made a choice about how the commandments were numbered. We always know them as the Ten Commandments, but if you notice in the reading just now, it didn't say the first commandment is, the second commandment is, and so on. And so in Judaism, in Roman Catholicism, among Lutherans, and among Reformed Protestants like Presbyterians, there are some subtle differences in how they are numbered. And so if you were to choose to have a public display of the Ten Commandments, you might have to ask, well, which list are we going to label and display? In New York, my friend and colleague Nicole was the pastor of a Lutheran church, and our kids briefly attended their preschool. And one day I was wandering around the halls and I saw a Sunday school display on the wall that included the Ten Commandments, and I realized that the list was actually the Reformed Protestant list and not the Lutheran list. And so I teased my friend Nicole about that, and she later looked and said, "You know what? You're right." And I'm also quite sure that we were the only two in the building who knew what the difference was. And I think another bigger issue with the way that that monument was built was that it left off perhaps the most important part of the commandments. It left out that part that said, "I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery." In the Jewish tradition, that part is so vital that it's actually called the first commandment. While in our Reformed Presbyterian tradition, it's usually called the preface. But calling it a preface doesn't make it an optional preface. Without that powerful affirmation that I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, the Ten Commandments is nothing more than a list, or a prop for a Mel Brooks movie on the history of the world. Preacher and writer Tom Long points out that many people think of the Ten Commandments as weighty burdens or encumbrances placed on our personal behavior. Most people cannot name all 10, but they are convinced that at the heart of each commandment is a finger wagging, "Thou shalt not." For others, the commandments are heavy yokes to be placed on the necks of a rebellious society. As Tom Long points out, for such an understanding of the Decalogue, a 2.5-ton rock sitting on a flatbed truck might be a very good symbol. And we forget that the prophet Isaiah once chided the Babylonians for hauling their heavy idols on the backs of weary animals. And if Isaiah had seen the 2.5-ton monument being hauled around on a truck, he'd no doubt be worried about the springs and shocks. But the Ten Commandments, as we've already said in our worship service, are not meant to be heavy burdens. What they really are is a breathtaking announcement of freedom. Instead of thinking of them as encumbrances, we can think of them as a description of a life that is truly free. Because the Lord is your God, you are free not to need any other gods. That's the first great freedom. And the second, you are free from dehumanizing idols, and you are free to worship and adore the God who can never be reduced to a manageable size. The third, you are free from those who would try to use God's name to manipulate you. Number four, you are free to rest on the Sabbath. We don't really do that anymore, but we're free to. We're free to have a Sabbath and to rest during it. Really rest. Number five, you are free from the prison of self-centeredness, and you are free to honor your parents and your ancestors in the faith. Number six, you are free from the murderous cycle of violence, and you are free to live in God's shalom peace. That freedom seems like only a dream today, but that's how all great freedoms begin. Even in the aftermath of a horrible attack on Israel, even during a war in the Ukraine that wages on, even with all the other conflicts that are as yet unresolved, even with the war on our streets, we can dream. We can dream of being free at last from a murderous cycle of violence. Number seven, you are free from the destructive path of adultery, and you are free to live in a life of faithfulness and commitment. Number eight, you are free from the constant worry that someone is trying to take your stuff. And you are free to live off what God provides you. Number nine, you are free from gossip and lies about your character. And you, in turn, are free to speak the truth in love. And finally, number 10, you are free from the endless cycle of always wanting more. 10 great freedoms. Do we embrace these perfectly? No. But they're freedoms that we are called to embrace, freedoms that we are invited to embrace. The old slavery of the past to cherished idols, to destructive patterns of gossip may be familiar, but we are called instead to embrace the road to true freedom. The road to loving God and all of our neighbors without restraint, to love them fully, and to realize that that love always, always, always takes precedence over the letter of the law. How many times have we ruined the law by only focusing on the letter of the law and forgetting the Spirit? Here's an example. The late Fred Craddock was a wonderful preacher and storyteller. And he told the story of an elderly man whose only close friend was his dog. The love between them had deepened through the years, and now both the man and the dog had begun to feel the pain and burden of age. The dog, 12 years old, could hardly walk and was covered with an irritating rash. The elderly man lifted the dog into his arms and carried it to the car, where it lay on the seat beside him on the way to the vet. From the parking lot, the old man carried the dog gently inside. "Can I help you?" asked the veterinarian. The old man, still holding his dog, said, "First, I must ask you a question. Do you love animals above everything else?" The veterinarian replied, "Well, I love God first. Jesus says in Mark chapter 12, verse 30, that you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. And of course, the second command is to love thy neighbor as oneself. We have to put these things first, and then we can think about the animals. "Then I must go elsewhere," said the old man as he moved to the door. "Why? What is wrong?" said the vet. "Why are you walking away?" "The dog is my friend," said the elderly man. "And I feel I can trust him only to the care of a veterinarian who practices what he preaches." The commandments are not meant to be burdensome. They're not meant to be legalisms that we impose on each other. They're meant to free us to love God and our neighbors.